Dr. Chambers on Call, sponsored by City of Hope.
This is Dr. Chambers on Call on Talk Radio 790 KABC, 800-222-5222. No questions too dumb, no questions too tough, no questions too embarrassing. 800-222-5222. And here's Dr. Chambers.
I'm Dr. Chambers, live and local on Talk Radio 790 KABC. In the next hour, let's talk about the Surgeon General. He sent a letter out to 2.3 million U.S. doctors, including me. And the letter wasn't about me, it was about you. It was about how I treat you, and he was giving us some advice. And presidential candidates' health has been dominating the news this week. In fact, we had some kind of outrageous statements from all kinds of people. And this one I thought was kind of interesting. And this was the physician who wrote the letter for Donald Trump. And he said, "I thought about it all day. And at the end, I get rushed and I get anxious when I get rushed. So I try to get four or five lines done as fast as possible that they would be happy with." So what he's saying here is that we're choosing our presidential candidates based on very dubious health things. Is it important for us to know if they're healthy or not? Of course it is. Of course it is. And in my third segment, I'll have advice for parents sending kids to college. We have other stuff on the EpiPen saving lives, but the cost of the EpiPen, legalized robbery, and you'll be outraged as to how they get away with it. All that, of course, and your calls, 800-222-5222 is the number to call. Now, the Surgeon General, which is the nation's doctor, his name is Vivek Murthy, sent out a letter this week to 2.3 million U.S. doctors. And the letter basically said, "Guys, gals, what are you doing? What are you doing? The U.S. population represents 5% of the world, and we're using 80% of the world's opiates. 80% of the world's opiates. Think about it. The European bloc, almost as wealthy as the U.S., certainly as sophisticated as the U.S., they're in that 20% of drugs, the 20% that we're not using. There's virtually no state in the Union that hasn't been devastated by drug addiction. No state. Even strong rural communities have been devastated. And it frequently starts in a doctor's office like the ones that I worked in all my life. You break a bone, we give you something for the pain. You have surgery, we give you some morphine. And you go like, wow, what has gone wrong? Well, since the late 1990s, we in medicine have changed our philosophy to managing your pain. I remember as a resident being told that nobody ever, ever, ever should be in pain. If they were in pain, you were a bad doctor. If they were in pain, you were being negligent. If you were in pain, you should be ashamed of yourself. And when some of us piped up, even at the tender young age we were in training, "Oh, is this a great idea? I mean, the morphine for a little pyelonephritis, what up, some ibuprofen or Tylenol?" We were shot down. We were told categorically that if you give somebody an opiate in acute pain because they broke a bone, they've had some surgery, they will not get addicted. And you go, wow, really? Really? It looks like we never learn in society about opiates. We humans make the same mistake over and over and over again. Back in the 19th century when heroin was introduced, the one sheet, the advertisement, think movie poster advertising it, getting people of the day to buy the drug, said this: "Heroin, the first opiate that is non-addictive." I can't even say it without laughing. The first opiate that is non-addictive. Wow. See how well that worked out for us? See how well that worked out? Well, now we're at the point where people who are 35 to 54, the biggest cause of death for them is drug addiction, is overdoses of drugs. And you go like, oh, more common, more common than firearms, more common than car crashes. Really? Really? Yes, that's where we are. And he gave out a special reminder about things like, he said, like, when you want to prescribe something because somebody needs acute care, needs something for their acute pain, think about using the smallest dose for the shortest period of time. And that's generally what a lot of us are trying to do now. Smallest dose for the shortest period of time. And then switch people from the opiate over to anti-inflammatories like Aleve or Advil quickly and throw in some Tylenol. And then watch your patients. Get to know your patients. See if they have an addictive personality. And say to yourself, where else are they going for these drugs? Are they doctor shopping? Are they ER shopping? Going to different ERs and saying, oh, my belly is hurting me. Please give me some pain meds. Yeah, that happens every day. Every single day that happens. Frequent flyers, we call them. Nowadays, we have a program called CURES, C-U-R-E-S. And every physician has to be part of it. That's the law now. So if you come to see me and you're looking for pain meds, I can put your date of birth, your name, all those kind of details in, and up will pop all of the pain meds that everybody has prescribed for you. The ER doc, what she gave you, your family doc, what she gave you, your specialist, whatever, and all the pharmacies that are listed. So, assuming the pharmacist is entering it when he gives it to you, we're kind of aware of all the stuff that you're getting. So I think that's a very, very good idea. And then the third thing that he says, and this is something that I strongly believe in, is that when somebody becomes addicted to prescription opiates, it is not their fault. It is not their moral failing. It is not because they're weak. No. That's like blaming somebody who's got pneumonia. That's like blaming them that your lungs are weak. Why did you get the pneumonia? It's a ridiculous concept. So we want to get out there and we want to tell people this. If your doctor prescribed drugs and for whatever reason you've become addicted, let us know. Let us know. And we'll help you with the addiction. We'll get you out of it. But the first step is admitting it and discussing with your doctor. And I want to take one more point before I take the first call, and it's this. It's what I call the heat-leisure combo, which is what a lot of people do. They mix alcohol, benzos, Librium, Valium, all these things, and Norco or fentanyl or Oxy. And this combination is lethal. You mix opiates with benzos, whoa, you're going to stop breathing. Whoa, you're going to have a problem. And these drugs, they don't just affect the famous like Heath Ledger or Prince. They affect the non-famous. They don't care. They'll kill anybody. So when you see guys like me and we talk to you, and if we have to give you pain meds, we say this. Doesn't mix with alcohol. Doesn't combine with other drugs. Not safe for driving. And watch yourself, because you won't be aware you may fall and hurt yourself. That's not boilerplate. That's not just CYA. That's giving you good advice. Good advice. And let's take a call and we'll come back to this. Let's talk to George. Hi, George. Hi, George.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
About 6 months ago, I had shingles, even though I had a single shot.
Okay.
And on the left-hand side, there's a breakout on my body and then on my arm, and then my arm had pain, so the doctor prescribed Lyrica.
Lyrica, yeah.
And the pain went away, but now the left arm is stiff and sore.
Okay.
So the doctor says, well, keep on taking Lyrica. But I told him, the last couple of months, nothing has changed, so the only thing that's happening is it's emptying out my pocketbook there.
And that I understand, George. That I understand. So let's break this problem down a little bit. When you get shingles, shingles is reactivation of childhood chicken pox. And usually what happens is you get a burning sensation somewhere along a nerve route, classically on the chest wall or the belly wall, and then you get a rash, which is blisters with fluid. That's really acutely sore. It's really sore. So we tend to give acute pain meds like ibuprofen or Tylenol for that kind of stuff. Sadly, sometimes the rash goes away and the pain persists. And this is what we call nerve pain. And for everybody listening, it's very important to understand, since we're talking about opiate addiction, this kind of pain does not respond to Norco, doesn't respond to Oxy, fentanyl, doesn't respond to any of those. It's a totally different kind of pain. And the medicine that we use is either gabapentin or Lyrica. Now, in George's case, he uses Lyrica. Lyrica, really good, extremely expensive. Big copay. Big copay. So I tend to use gabapentin, G-A-B-A-P-E-N-T-I-N. There's a generic form of it, and it works for most people. Not everybody, for most people. And some of you may be wondering, like, George got the shingles shot and he still got shingles. What's that about? The vaccine doesn't work? Ah, the vaccine works. Definitely works. Occasionally, though, like everything else in life, it's not 100%. So what happens then? You may get a breakout, but it's going to be a lot less severe than if you didn't have the shot. But most of the time, it prevents the breakouts. So I would encourage people, I think the cutoff age now is 50, 55 for the shingles shot. So I would encourage people to go off and get that. So in George's case, George, I don't think that you need to have the Lyrica at this point. And what I do is go back and say to him, is this really related, this pain, the stiffness of my arm? Is it really related to the shingles? Or am I just getting a stiff shoulder or other problem? So in your case, George, I would question the diagnosis. That was George, and he called me on 800-222-5222. And you can call me, too, with whatever is on your mind about your health. Doesn't have to be what I'm talking about. The show is about you. Final thought on opiate addiction. One of the things that I always worried about when people come in and say to me, give me a refill on my Oxy, give me a refill on this, what do I fear? They'll go out and buy street drugs. Because these pills, Oxy on the street, $100 or so, $120 for 4 or 5 pills, heroin, $10. So if you have a problem and you're withdrawing, tell the urgent care doctor, tell your family doctor that you need something just to cover you while you get into where? You get into pain management, you get into rehab, you get some help. 800-222-5222. More of your calls, more about everything when I come back. But what are we going to talk about next? We're going to talk about presidential health here live and local on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Dr. Chambers On Call will continue answering more of your questions.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Gallagher, CEO of Coastal Payroll. BBB knows that we pride ourselves on being the most respected provider of workforce management solutions in California by making a positive impact on the lives of our clients. Earning an A-plus rating from the BBB shows that we never waver from our values and we try to be better every day. Our BBB accreditation puts us on the short list of payroll service companies BBB has verified. Coastal Payroll invites you to check out our reviews at bbb.org.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, my name is...
Hey, this is Dr. Drew.
My name is...
And I'm Mike Catherwood.
And on the next Midday Live, we will take your calls. And Amber Heard accuses Johnny Depp of cutting corners with the divorce settlement.
You were going to pay $7 million? Nah, $14 million, buddy.
I mean, why not, right?
Yeah, sounds like my first divorce. Same numbers.
Well, lots of zeros, certainly. Just no other numbers than zeros, right?
Oh, Drew.
It's Midday Live. It's Dr. Mike Catherwood. Talk Radio 790 KBC.
This is Dr. Chambers On Call, live and local on Talk Radio 790 KABC. 800-222-5222 is the number to call. And on this show, no questions too dumb, no questions too tough, and no questions too embarrassing. Can't even see your face. Come on, it's radio. 800-222-5222. Now, one of my favorite themes on this show is aging. And what it means and what it doesn't mean. Because some people equate aging with being unhappy. They equate aging with loss of function. They equate aging as being, oh, my God. You know the new millennial joke that they claim people who are a little bit older, people who are 40 or older just don't get, that 40 is the new 80 to them? You go like, what? 40 is the new 80? And some of that crept into the presidential and other election stuff this week. Senator John McCain is running for the Senate in Arizona again, and he is 80 years of age. By all accounts, a vigorous man. By all accounts, full of energy, drive, and go. His opponent, who is a physician, was diagnosing him as being what? As having old age. She said she was diagnosing him because she knows what happens to your body when you're 80. And I thought, like, whoa, she must be low in the polls. She must be low in the polls, going that low in her comments. And then we had this meme that Senator, ex-Secretary Hillary Clinton was just not fit. She wasn't healthy. There was something out there. She was this and she was that and it was the other. And then NBC got an exclusive, and they talked to Donald Trump's physician, who said he was the healthiest, fittest person in the history of the world ever to run for the presidency. And then he gave an interview, and I thought to myself, whoa, what is all that about? And in the interview, I just felt like, he's not somebody that I might particularly trust, specifically since he spent 5 minutes writing the letter. So when we're talking about age, what are we talking about? Because the older I get, I'm in my 50s now, the more sensitive I am to this subject. Because ageism is very prevalent in our society. If Donald Trump wins the election, he will be 70 in January taking office, which will be older than President Reagan and probably the oldest in our history taking the presidency. Mrs. Clinton won't be far behind. She will be 69 then if she wins. Who knows who's going to win? And what I want you to understand is a couple of things about aging. If you're 60, you could be healthier than a 40-year-old. So we in medicine talk about chronological age and biological age. I see a lot of people in my practice who are 40 or 50, and they're really unhealthy. They may be 100 pounds overweight. They may have diabetes. They don't exercise. They're not looking after themselves. They have neuropathy. They have heart disease. They have all kinds of stuff. So their what I would consider their biologic age is way in advance of their actual birthday age, their chronological age. Now, age doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to get sick, but it does mean that your chances of getting sick are much more likely than if you're 20. We have to say that. Now, traditionally, everybody has released some medical info, even if it's a one page. Skeptics like me are wondering, when we get this one page, how accurate is it? Some years ago, Paul Sangus, who was a senator from the Northeast, was running for the Democratic nomination. And unfortunately, he had a history of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is curable, mind you. The senator said that he was indeed cured, and he wasn't, and he knew that. And worse, the doctors managing him knew that. He didn't win the nomination and subsequently died a little over 4 years. So he would have died in his first term in office, not causing that much of a crisis. We did have a vice president. He would have had a vice president, I mean. But the fact is, we didn't quite get the truth there. And for those of you thinking, if you're 30 or you're 22, you go like, well, we could just have people who are 40 become president. Well, when I grew up in Ireland, John F. Kennedy was a legend, as he is here. John F. Kennedy was the first Irish-American president. He was adored when I was growing up in Ireland. And John Kennedy had a thing called Addison's disease, which is where his adrenal gland doesn't work very well. So when he gets sick, his gland wouldn't react, so he had to have special medicine on top of his daily medicine. There's a lot of complications managing Addison's disease. And we're much better at it in 2016 than we were back in the 1960s, let me tell you that. Some people like me might think if that was known about him at the time, that medically might have disqualified him from the office. So the fact that somebody is really young and we don't know their medical history doesn't necessarily give them a pass. The fact that somebody is older may not necessarily mean that they're not medically fit for the presidency. So when somebody becomes president, what are we asking them to do? We're asking them to take on an enormous amount of stress. You know, the easy problems don't land on the president's desk, because if they're easy, they wouldn't have gotten there. They would have been solved a lot sooner. So stress, 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 first thing. They've got to be physically, you know, the amount of meetings, the travel, the duration of the day, it just goes on and on. And you're never not president. You're never in Martha's Vineyard for the whole day where you're not, somebody doesn't tell you something that you have to make a decision on. So we're looking for mental stamina. We're looking for physical stamina. And we would like the president to live through the whole term that they've been elected for. Now, whether you're 5 or 100, nobody can guarantee you're going to be alive in 4 years. Nobody at all. It's just not going to happen. But we like to have some criteria. So lots of people over the years have looked at this and they've come back historically and said, what happened to other presidents? You know, Woodrow Wilson, in the early part of the 20th century, he had a stroke that was hidden. FDR, the great, the legendary FDR, he had a lot of heart problems in his final term. And he was campaigning for his final third term. There were a lot of issues there. Some people think that the latter part in his negotiations with Stalin and stuff, he wasn't as well as he should have been. And that may have hampered him in the negotiations. So where does that leave us? We all know that Mr. Trump is not going to give us all the information we want. And we know that Mrs. Clinton is not going to give us all the information we want. Do we have a right to it? It's their personal health information. So should we be saying to them, we need to know all of this? Well, if you want to be a pilot, we say to you, you have to be medically fit. If you have a history of depression, we get nervous about that. So we look at you very carefully. We do drug screens on you. Same thing if you're a doctor. There are lots of jobs where we screen you before we let you do it. And there's lots of jobs where we put limitations on you. We don't want the bus driver on an opiate for the back pain. We don't want the bus driver going down the road with a whole load of people in the back and they have a history of blackouts all the time. So we do put restrictions. And this is one of the most powerful jobs in the world. One of the, if not the most powerful and the most important job in the world, certainly to us Americans, that's what we think. So maybe it's time to set up an independent commission that will look at this problem and say, hey, we're down to the final two running for office, or maybe even a bit before that, look at some of the candidates before it's whittled down to the final two. And they should be examined and tested and worked up to see if they're actually fit for office, medically fit for office. Not morally, not that you agree with their views or anything like that, just that they are they medically fit for the office? Do I expect this to happen? Not really. Not really. This has been proposed time in and time out. But it only flares up when people start pretending that there's something wrong when there actually isn't something wrong. 800-222-5222. If you want to join the conversation or ask me a medical question, now it doesn't have to be about what we're talking about. It can be about whatever is on your mind about your health. 800-222-5222. Now, when I'm not live and local on 790 KABC, you can follow me on my website, which is drchambersoncall.com, and on Facebook, Dr. Chambers on Call. If you do visit Facebook, hit like, let me know you were there. You can ask me a question. One of my regular Facebook people, Valerie, has a sister in hospital and she has some concerns about her. She thinks that the diagnosis isn't right or that there isn't really a good working diagnosis. Her sister is very young, a complicated case. So I responded to her directly on Facebook. So if you want to send me a question there, I can do that too. Or you can suggest topics for the show. Now, before I leave the whole thing about aging, I saw this little study this week and I thought, hey, got to share this. I really like this. And it's this simple. We all think that as we get older, life will be less fun. We all think as we get older, life just can't be as good. I mean, really, you're 22. The thought of being 30 is just, the world's going, I'm going to hit 30. And then when you're 30, you realize, not that bad. And then you think, oh my God, but 40 is going to be the end of everything. Then you hit 40 and it's, you know, you're 40. That's all you are. You're just 40. Life is different. And a study out this week showed that people tend to be happier as they get older. And you go like, is that possible? In a society where if you're over 49, we don't count you in the knees and ratings. Cable news won't look at you if you're 55 in a day. So can you actually be happier as you get older in America? And it turns out that, yes, certainly according to this survey, you can be happier. And part of it is because there's some brain changes, yeah, good ones, not bad ones, good ones, that the part of your brain, the amygdala, which is dealing with anger and primal emotions, doesn't respond as aggressively, pun intended, to stressful or negative things in your life. Doesn't respond to that at all. You tend to know yourself that much better, and you're a little bit wiser. You kind of won't overreact to something. And you know your limitations. You've kind of accepted them at that point. And you're just happy. And sometimes when decisions come to you, instead of spending 3 or 4 weeks, like when you're 20-something, you're agonizing over, should I ask her out? What should I do? You kind of are decisive. You're kind of decisive. And you make the decision. And you sit back. And you know what you like. And what I want to get across to you, whether you're 20, whether you're 30, 40, 50, whatever age you are as you're listening to this show, is that as you age, every single phase of your life has the good and the bad. And it's a question of how you want to approach it. If you want to think that every day you're over 30, life is miserable because you're not a 20-something anymore. Or every day over 40, you think, ugh, it's over. You know, I had a patient say to me recently, I'm a bit down. And I said, why? What's the issue? Well, I'm 20. I'm not a teenager anymore. And he go like, really? Really? But that's the kind of stuff that we build up in our head. It's the kind of stuff that we need to get away from. Because the only moment that's important is the moment that you have now. That's it. That's the only moment you're guaranteed. And whether you're 20 or 60 or 80, you're not making the most of that now. You can't really be healthy. And you definitely can't be happy. 800-222-5222 is the number to call. You can call, chat about whatever is on your mind about your health. Ask me a question. Comment on the show. Whatever it is. When I come back, I want to talk about parents are sending a lot of kids off to college just about now or in the next few weeks. What kind of advice should you give them? Should you talk about sex? Should you talk about alcohol? Do you give them a little health kit to go there? What should you tell them? That and your calls and lots more when I return. 800-222-5222. This is Dr. Chambers on Call, live and local on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
More Dr. Chambers on Call coming up.
Mortgage rates are pushing all-time lows. One after another, our clients are locking 30-year rates in the threes, 15s in the twos, and in many cases, we're paying the closing costs. I'm Dan Smith with Private Plus Mortgage. Our clients are saving hundreds each month, thousands each year. That's because my team does the work to show you options that save you the most money. So lower your payments. Get cash to remodel that kitchen, pay off credit cards, or pay off that mortgage sooner. Even if you've refied in the last 3 years, now's the time to get your all-time low and save the money you deserve. Call Private Plus Mortgage today, 888-220-6200. Refi or purchase, 888-220-6200. Private Plus Mortgage.
Private Bank of Buckhead, 3 Piedmont Center, Atlanta, Georgia, 30305. Actual terms may vary. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender, and MLS number 758195. Call toll-free for credit costs and terms.
Hiring people is probably the worst part of my job. It's such a hassle, the searching, the sorting through resumes. Most people don't have the right experience.
We started using ZipRecruiter about 3 months ago. Right from the start, you could tell it was going to make hiring a lot easier. One click and my job was posted to 100+ job boards, all the top sites.
All of the candidates came to my dashboard, and it's easy to compare them. Thumbs up if I liked them, thumbs down if I didn't. No emails and attachments, printing up docs, phone calls, none of that.
And I couldn't believe the number of great applicants we got. I had the person we needed within 1 week. I don't know how we hired before ZipRecruiter.
Whether you're looking to fill one position or 20, find the best candidates with ZipRecruiter, where your job is just one click away from 100+ job sites. ZipRecruiter, the fastest way to hire. And right now you can try ZipRecruiter free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/talkradio. That's ZipRecruiter.com/talkradio. ZipRecruiter.com/talkradio.
Coming soon, a blizzard of new laws.
And is your coffee Jones in your DNA?
On the next Doug and T-Ray Get Smart 5 to 10 right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
This is Dr. Chambers on Call, live and local on Talk Radio 790 KABC. 800-222-5222 is the number to call with whatever is on your mind about your health. I'm an acute care physician. I treat everything from hemorrhoids to heart attacks. You get the picture. 800-222-5222. Now, this is the time of the year when parents sometimes are becoming empty nesters, or at least one of their children are going off to college. So I want to give a little bit of what I call DCOC advice to these parents. Like, what do you say to your kid? You've looked after them for 18, 19, 20 years, whatever it is. Often nowadays, the helicopter parents are trying in there to satisfy every single whim. But now they may be going to the far side of the country. Who's going to look after them? All of a sudden, they're going to be on their own. Now, you do have to have what I call the sex talk. Ugh. Whether you've had it before or not, you have to have it again. You have to have it again. And the most important thing to tell them are, you never know anybody's sexual history but your own. But you never do. No matter how they look, no matter how healthy they look, you don't know. That's the first thing. And tell them there's a difference between protecting yourself against pregnancy, against an unwanted pregnancy if you're a woman, or against being an unwanted father, and preventing a sexually transmitted infection. The best way to prevent unwanted pregnancies are things like IUDs, which are long-term contraceptives. Woman puts it inside, it stays there for 5 years and it covers her, but it doesn't protect her against STIs. Very important to understand. If you have a gay child, you have to talk to them. You have to talk to them. What are they going to do? Condoms are a must. If there's high-risk behavior or suspected, there's a thing called PrEP, which are medications you take every day that will help prevent HIV. Very important. Uncomfortable conversations, huh? Not the ones you go like, really, I have to do this? And then sometimes I've had some parents say to me in the practice, well, I mean, it's not like when I was a teenager or 20. I mean, I have a much better relationship with my son or my daughter. They'll ask me whatever they want. They'll talk to me. Of course they will. It's not like my mom. My mom wouldn't talk to me about anything. Well, here's the thing. When you're a mom and you have a child, you're a dad and you have a child, nobody wants to cross that barrier talking about sex. But you're the adult. You're the parent. You have to go in and talk to them. And you have to go in and give them some tips. Very, very important. And one of the things that I find in millennials is this. They get screens for sexually transmitted infections a lot. A lot. And some of them get it in their head that when they're screened and the test is negative, that they're good, they're safe. And I tell them, like, this is a screen that tells you, are you infected now? It doesn't protect you. And serial negative tests, you go in and get them every 6 months or whatever, they keep telling you you're normal. If you don't change your behavior, guess what? One of these tests is going to turn out to be positive. One of these tests, one of these days, is going to be positive. It's kind of like running across the 405. You may be able to do it once or twice and not get hit by a car. Do it often enough, that car is going to smack you. It is going to smack you. And then we have drugs. Alcohol, illegal drugs. Now, I know that your son, your daughter won't do that. But alcohol is really common on college campuses. And even if they're 21 and it's legal, you have to talk to them about it. And you have to emphasize to everybody involved that when you're drunk, you can't give consent for sex. And when you're drunk, you can't. And when somebody else is drunk, they can't give you consent for sex. Dads, real important you talk to your sons about that. A woman who's blind drunk cannot give consent for sex. Cannot be done. Cannot be done. Very important to get that out there. And the other thing that we often see a lot of these days are sexting. And you want to emphasize to people this, to your son, to your daughter, that pretty much every website is hacked at some point. The National Security Agency was hacked a short while ago. The NSA was hacked. So these websites that said if you send a sexed picture to your lover, to your friend, whoever, nobody else is ever going to see it. That's a lie. Once it goes out there, it's going to be there forever. It's going to be there forever. I'm going to take a couple of calls here. They're backing up. So let me talk to John. Hi, John.
Doctor, I'll talk real quick because it's kind of complicated.
Go ahead.
A patient was on arthritis medication, and it was like Humira. So she was, I guess, technically immune compromised.
Sure.
But it was close to the 8-week period of time when it's infected. But she was sent to the hospital, and they started her on a urine culture test.
Yeah.
And then 3 days later, she was sent home. But this happened. She was sent home before the test results came back.
Before the culture results, right?
Yeah, the culture results. The test results came back showing that she had bacteria, 100,000 CFU, and also Klebsiella in her or urine.
Okay.
And then they sent her home anyway, and we didn't know anything. And then a week later, we had to go see her at the nursing home, and she couldn't even recognize us. She didn't know who we were.
Okay.
It was shocking. So we had to go back to the hospital, and they did the exact same thing over again. They did a urine culture test. Test results came back exactly the same, and they sent her home in 3 days again.
Mm-hmm.
Then about a week later, she had to be insured in the hospital for urosepsis. And I read in the medical records that she had Klebsiella urosepsis, and she died from that about a month later.
Oh, John, I'm sorry for your loss. That's very sad.
And I think it might have been that was a very serious breach of standard of care, because her immune system was down, even though she was still, it was a long time since her last dose. This happened on October 9th. The dosage was August 11th, but
okay.
And they did it twice like that way. And I knew she didn't feel right when they sent her home, and I wondered if, according to what you would know, if that was appropriate to do, or could that have seriously affected her health?
I understand, John. Let's break this down a little bit for our other listeners and you, so they can understand what we're talking about. When you're older, often the way you present when you have an infection, especially in the urinary tract, is you don't get a burning sensation when you pee, or what we call frequency, or you just have to pee like a lot of younger women would get. You often get just the patient deteriorates. You're not quite sure why. They're a little bit what we call obtunded. So when we see that, we tend to do the investigations and treat aggressively. Now, in John's, was it your mom, John?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. In John's mom's case, she was on a medicine called Humira, which is a very good medicine in arthritis.
It was actually Revocade, so it was a long time ago, but it's the same kind of
same concept, yeah. Well, those medicines affect your immune response. Now, let me tell you up front that the majority of times that somebody comes in and we think they're infected, and we think that they have a serious infection, what we call urosepsis. And sepsis just means infection. Uro means related to the kidney bladder area. That's all that means. It's really, I see this all the time, and we use this term. It's very simple. So we never wait for the culture to come back, because if we did, the patient would be sicker and may not even be with us if we waited. So what we do is we make assumptions, and we treat that. And when I say we make assumptions is we use high-power drugs like, say, for instance, ceftriaxone, and we put them into the vein of the person, and that should make them better. And then when the culture comes back several days later, we may make the antibiotic simpler or change the antibiotic based on what the culture shows. But we would never, ever wait for the culture to come back before treating, because that would be a disaster. Now, when you're that bit older and you've got problems, or you're in and out of hospitals, you acquire these nasty infections. And sadly, Klebsiella is one of those nasty infections, and it's hard to get rid of. And there's a new strain of this medicine, of this bug out, called Klebsiella ESBL. And they don't respond to anything by mouth. They only respond to intravenous antibiotics. And that brings us into the whole area of antibiotic resistance and how it's becoming a huge, huge problem. Now, that's not something that you or I can solve. That's something that presidential candidates, the government, the feds, the FDA, they all have to do there, get in there and fix this issue. But getting back to John's specific problem, is that sending her home before the culture, not a big deal. We do it all the time. We don't send you out of the hospital unless we think you're getting better. And by getting better, we would look at, is your heart rate normal? Is your blood pressure normal? Do you feel well? Are your blood tests better? Is your white cell count, which is probably high at the beginning of this infection, is that back to normal? So we look at all of those criteria and then say, patient is better now. Patient can go home safely. And we do that. So, John, in your mom's case, when she went home those times, was she well? Was she talking to you? Was she good?
She she didn't look well. She didn't think. They said she didn't show symptoms of an infection, but we went back to the hospital and they said she looks like she has encephalopathy because of a urine infection.
Yeah.
And this was what went on a week earlier. They sent her home with it.
So when you looked at the culture report, John, did it say things like, I know you said it was Klebsiella, were the letters ESBL, capital letters?
I don't know if they knew of it at that time. This was quite a number of years ago, but it definitely said Klebsiella.
Klebsiella.
It said she had an infection.
Well, see, John, I'm sorry to... Here's what everybody has to understand who are listening to me, is that these bacteria are very powerful. And we've kind of come into the frame of mind where we think that if somebody has an infection, we can fix it. If somebody has a bacterial infection, we have the antibiotics that can kill it. And that's just not necessarily so. Because when you get that bit older, you have other things that compromise you. Whereas if you're 24 and you get a rip-roaring, what we call pyelonephritis, which is a bad kidney infection, we give you fluids, we give you antibiotics, you tend to bounce back fairly quickly. That's an easy one. But as you get older, you may not bounce back as quickly as you would like. And if she's on something like Remicade that drops the immune system, there's a lot of complicating things there. So, you know, from what you're telling me, John, I don't think they did anything wrong. But sometimes these infections with Klebsiella, they're real hard to get rid of. And because it's real hard to get rid of, doesn't mean that the doctors did something wrong. And I tell you, John, if I thought he did something wrong, if I thought it was a malpractice issue there, I tell you, I really would. 800-222-5222 is the number to call. If, like John, you have a question, you want to talk about something, because, you know, this, as John was telling us, this happened to him many years ago, and obviously it's been on his mind, and sometimes it's good to call in and just say, hey, what happened here? Why is this haunting me a little bit, and could something more have been done? And it's reassuring, I think, to be told that everything that could be done was done. 800-222-5222. When I come back, a couple more quick points about advice for your kids when they go off to college. And the EpiPen. There's a new villain in the big pharma in America. And she just got a pay raise of what? She's up to $19 million a year. And she's gouging parents of $657 for a life-saving drug. Ugh. Why is it happening? Should it be happening? What can we do about it? That and your calls in the next segment, live and local, here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Dr. Chambers answers more of your questions when we continue.
Paying people to come in and give a speech is just a way to garner a favor. If you think for a minute that this behavior is going to change, you're out of your mind.
Tune in to Sam Nation, Saturday at 3 p.m. on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Every 40 seconds, over 250,000 tweets are sent. Over 5 million YouTube videos are viewed. And one person will die of heart disease or stroke. But you can make a difference. Join 790 KABC and the American Heart Association at a heart walk near you. Help raise awareness and funds by forming a team with family, friends, or coworkers. The fight against heart disease and stroke starts with you. Form a team and find a heart walk near you at heartwalkla.org. Sponsored by Union Bank and Keck Medicine of USC.
This is Dr. Chambers on call, live and local on Talk Radio 790 KABC. 800-222-5222 is the number to call. That's 800-222-5222. Now, this time of the year, parents are getting their adolescent kids, 20-somethings, heading them out to college. And I just want to give a little bit of what I call DCOC advice, Dr. Chambers on call advice, about what parents should do and talk to them before they go. And one of the things that people often forget when they're sending these kids out is this. It's not enough just to be physically healthy. They have to be mentally healthy. And part of that, when they go to a new college, whether it's out of state or across the country, they may not know very many people. Maybe the first time that they've really been away from home, they've no friends. And then they get there, and it's strange. And all of a sudden, they're going home, and there's nobody, no mom there, no dad there cooking dinner. They have to care for all of that themselves. So what do you tell your kid if they're gregarious and the captain of the football team or the head cheerleader or whatever? They'll make friends easily enough. But most of us are not captain of the school team. Most of us are not like that. So one of the pieces of advice you've got to give to your kids is find people who are like you and get to know them. If you're into theater, join the theater club. If you like chess, whatever. Whatever turns you on, find people who like the same things and you'll be able to make friends. Exercise. Exercise is a great way of relieving the stress of starting college. Do it every day. Do it every single day. Those are the basics. If you feel you're getting depressed, if you feel a little bit overwhelmed, call. Call home. Or go to the local health center and tell them, you know, it's my first year. I don't feel I can keep up. I think everyone is smarter than me. Whatever it is. Don't sit in your dorm. Don't sit in your apartment, whatever, thinking that nobody's out there to help you. There's lots of help. And tell your kid that there's lots of help out there. Tell them about this. And tell them that getting stressed when you go to college in the first year is kind of normal. Even feeling maybe a little bit overwhelmed, kind of normal. Kind of normal. And that they have to eat every single day. Good stuff. Not the junk food. Gotta have some good nutrition. And get some sleep. Get some sleep. A lot of people feel that, you know, I'm going to college, I'm young, I can cram at night, I can pull all these nighters. Tell them exams come up. It's better to have good sleep hygiene where they get some sleep, study during the day, and go fresh into the exam. Pulling all-nighters for a week beforehand, not going to help them all that much. So these are very basic things. And the last thought on this I want to give you is that you should give them a little kit, right? Because sometimes I see kids coming in from college into my practice and they've got a fever of 103, 104. They sat home, they sat in their apartment or wherever all day, didn't take any Advil, didn't take extra fluids. So give them the basic advice how to deal with a cold, how to recognize that the cold is getting worse and maybe seek medical attention. All the stuff that you were doing for them about their health, you've got to tell them, you're now in charge. You've got to do this. You've got to do it. And tell them over and over again, if they're having issues, guess what? Go seek medical help. There's a center on campus that will look after them if they're feeling blue, if their cold is not getting better, whatever it is, just so that they don't feel isolated. That's what you want. You don't want them to feel isolated. Let's talk to Ray. Hi, Ray.
Hi, I'm here. Thank you.
You're welcome. What's going on?
So my question is, I have taken a blood test. The blood test revealed that I am allergic to peanut butter.
Sure.
And also Timothy grass. And, you know, I mean, I really like peanut butter. I never had any allergic reaction to it. You know, I feed Timothy grass to my guinea pigs.
Okay.
I don't seem to have a reaction to that. But, you know, why would there be, you know, why would it show up in the blood test as having some kind of a reaction, but I don't necessarily have an immediate reaction to it. I do have, sometimes I have itching in my nose, throat, and ears.
Okay.
From various different things.
So, Ray, let me ask you, why did you get tested?
I got tested, I think, probably about 2 months ago.
But why did you do it?
Oh, why? It was actually just part of the blood screening panel, you know.
Okay.
They test their metabolic rate and hemoglobin.
Sure, gotcha. So, see, here's the thing. This is, I don't really like sending people blankety-blank off to get screened for allergies. Because often what happens is you find stuff that they're unaware of that they're allergic to, or you find that they're allergic to a million things. And then what are you going to do? What are you going to do then? You're going to live in a bubble so you avoid pollen, weed, all this kind of stuff? You don't. Now, peanut allergy is a very specific one, and it's also a very dangerous one because you can go from 0 to 60 very quickly with that kind of allergy. Now, think about what an allergy is. You ingest something. Gets into your body, whether it's a medicine like penicillin or it's a nut or it's peanut butter, whatever it is, and it sets up an immune response. And often the first thing that happens to you is you break out in a rash that's itchy. Now, rashes, not life-threatening. Not life-threatening at all. Annoying, itchy, look ugly, yes. So what do you take when that happens? You get some Benadryl, an antihistamine. The next phase in an allergic reaction is when your lips or tongue become swollen. That's much more serious, much more dangerous. You go to the ER, the emergency room with that. You don't go to your doctor's office. You don't go to an urgent care. You go to the emergency room. And the third phase in an allergy attack is when you have difficulties taking a breath in and it sounds like, and that's called stridor. That's a 911 call. 911. Don't try to drive yourself. Don't go to the ER. Call 911. So that's how we try to explain to people what an allergy attack is. Now, in the news this week, there's been a lot of stuff about the EpiPen, coincidentally. And the EpiPen is the treatment of choice for what we call anaphylaxis. And that's when you're having difficulty taking a big breath in, like that. That's when you have to use the EpiPen. And in that scenario, the person's blood pressure is also going to go down. So the EpiPen is the most important thing at that point. An EpiPen is adrenaline that's going to be injected into the thigh of the person. The reason that this has become controversial is that some years ago, this company called Mylan, M-Y-L-A-N, bought a company that had been supplying the military with pens. And the idea was that if the soldiers were exposed to a nerve toxin, they'd be able to stab themselves in the thigh and get the life-saving medication. Well, the CEO of that company recognized that if she could take this and make it more of a civilian thing for allergies, she could be on a winner. At that time, this auto-inject thing was about $50-$60. Not bad. Now, keep in mind that it was our money that went to the military application of this. We developed this product. So she took the product and said, A, allergies to things like peanut butter is going up. I can make it more aware, and I can tell parents about what if. What if your kid gets a peanut allergy? What if they get accidentally exposed to peanut butter when at school or in a friend's house? You need to have this emergency medication available at all times. And here's the thing. You can give the emergency medicine, and if you don't get to the emergency room quickly enough, it wears off within 15 minutes. So you have to have two doses of it, two what we call EpiPens. Wow. And worse, it expires within a year, a perishable commodity. And this went from like a small business to a billion and a quarter dollar business. Wow. Her salary went from $2 million a year, $2.5 million, to $19 million a year because she successfully sold this drug to a lot of people and put the price from a mere $60 to $600 or $700. And this is price gouging at its worst. And this is something that we as a society have to address. We have to come back and say, when we have a life-saving drug like EpiPen, this price gouging shouldn't be allowed. The Europeans don't let it happen. The Canadians don't let it happen. And we shouldn't have parents, we shouldn't have families stressed and say to themselves, I'm going to buy this emergency medicine for my kids or skimp on food. That's wrong. That's inappropriate, and that's capitalism at its worst because this company was allowed to get a monopoly. Got a lot more to say on that. I'll put it on Facebook because I'm almost out of time. I'll be off next week because it's Labor Day weekend. I hope you have a great Labor Day weekend, but I'll be back the following Saturday. Follow me on my website, drchambersoncall.com, Facebook, Dr. Chambers on Call. Don't forget, hit like, let me know you were there. If it's Saturday, noon to 1, it's Dr. Chambers on Call, live and local on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
The information in this show is intended for entertainment and educational purposes only. It is not a replacement or substitute for professional medical advice and or treatment. Consult with your own doctor for information and advice on your specific medical condition or questions.
Dr. Chambers on Call, sponsored by City of Hope.